Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcasts. And today we are talking about the Toronto Blue Jays, your AL champion, Toronto Blue Jays, your oh so close to World Series champions, Game 7, a thrilling Game 7. Still an incredible season for the Blue Jays, best season in many, many years. And here they are with a number one prospect in this organization that we already are well aware of, and we'll spend some time on, but we'll go a little deeper on this deep dive because we've talked about Treya Savage a good bit, and we're pretty sure that you are pretty well aware of Treya Savage. But I will ask you, Jeff, the question we start with always, how difficult was the decision to rate Treya Savage at number one?
Not hard. It was probably, J.J. Weatherholt in the Cardinals system was a pretty easy call. I would say that this was probably right up there. There was no questions at all. I knew who the number one prospect was at the end of the season, and it was only solidified in the last out of the World Series. We kind of knew who the number one prospect was going to be for the Blue Jays. I don't think there's any debate. There's no one, pounding the table for Arjun Namala or JoJo Parker. Any questions are going to be after one. It's clearly Treya Savage.
We do BA adjusted grades now, and we've done the kind of internally, but now we're displaying them to everyone. And Treya Savage adjusted grade is a 55 adjusted grade, which is a pretty high elite level, a tier for us. Arjun Namala and JoJo Parker are 45s. So that is a 10 point adjusted grade drop. That's a two tier drop below. So when Jeff says that there really wasn't a whole lot of debate at number one, there really wasn't a whole lot of debate at number one. The one question I'll ask is with you, Savage, is, and something we've talked about a little bit, but how I do kind of feel like that the thing that makes Treya Savage so effective, he is the most over-the-top starting pitcher basically in the major leagues, is also the thing that could be a little bit concerning from a standpoint of we don't see that many pitchers, that many starting pitchers that far over the top. Is this his biggest strength, or is there a possibility that durability-wise this could be a little bit of a concern down the road? How much are you worried about? I think I'm a little more worried about than you are, yeah. But how much are you worried about?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things that with you, Savage, we had heard going back to the actual draft. And I would say leading up to that point in time, when he did get drafted or even days ahead of it, probably was one of the biggest arrow down guys among any of the college eligible players in that draft. I think now, like hindsight being 2020, there's probably a lot of teams, that picked between 10 and 20 that probably wish they did take Treya Savage.
I would agree.
But the issue here is he's had a track record of handling innings, through, I don't have the playoff numbers in front of me, but at least in terms of the regular season, he threw 112 innings between every level of professional baseball, through 93 and a third the year before, plus some postseason innings with East Carolina. And that was, after dealing with a collapsed lung situation through an acupuncture procedure that just went awry. We've seen that happen with some guys before.
I was going to say dry needling. I think TJ Watt knows something about that as well.
Yeah, exactly. I was leading that right into you, just like serving it up to the Steelers fan here. I think, you look at your Savage's track record, he's handled a lot of innings. I've had people tell me he couldn't throw any other way. I don't know why he would. Why would he change how he throws?
It's what makes him
so much success. It's what makes him unique. It's a weird operation, but we've seen guys that had buttery smooth mechanics and they met every mechanical marker, and they've still gotten injured. So, it's so hard to sort of project that out, especially when a guy does have kind of the number one thing I think we see with starting pitchers, which is a track record of handling innings dating back to college, pitching in some big moments. He checks all those boxes. I think the big question is, can he survive without a pitch that really moves glove side? Because even his slider moves arm side most of the time. the four-seam fastball obviously moves that way with a ton of ride and, you know, the devastating splitter, but doesn't have sort of any of the glove side pitches. Is he maybe going to try to add one? And does that maybe mess with the fastball shape or the splitter or something? That remains to be seen. But I think that's the biggest question mark for me. It's not necessarily health or the arm slot or the arm action. It's more, you know, can he add something that, you know, guys just aren't, you know, sitting the sort of arm side on everything that he throws.
When you look, I think the more interesting debate, okay, number one was a slam dunk, but you have the two shortstops, you have the two high school shortstops, prominent picks, different years, obviously, but you have Arjun Namala, who has shown flashes of greatness, I would say, in the minors and has had stretches of time where it's like, oof, what's going on with Arjun Namala? And then you have JoJo Parker, who they drafted in the 2025 draft. How close was the decision of who was two and who was three? Obviously, Arjun Namala has the advantage of proximity, playing significant playing time in the minor leagues. You know, that I could see that being the edge there, but was that a tougher decision?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a tougher decision because I think, you know, the shiny new toy syndrome kind of comes into play sometimes with these draft guys, especially when they go high. And there is a lot of talk about the hit tool and power. And a lot of people, you know, that know what they're talking about, had even argued that this might be the best combination of power and hit tool among the high school class in this draft. That remains to be seen. But I think in talking to some folks internally, it tended to be more Namala. The reports that I get on Namala from scouts are more optimistic than I think the slash line might indicate. It's also worth keeping in mind just how young he is. You know, he's completed two full years of minor league baseball and just turned 20 years old after the season. A week before the end of the World Series, he turned 20 years old. So he's going to be 20 again for all of this year. You know, he was the same age as some draft guys from the 2024 class last year and was in high A. The thing that I kind of keep going back to in Namala, which is a big question mark for JoJo, is the shortstop defense. I don't think there's anybody I spoke with that thinks that Parker will stick at shortstop. There's almost nobody that I spoke with that doesn't think Namala will stick at shortstop. I get consistent 55 to 60 grades in the glove, consistent 55 to 60 plus on the arm. Some people have even thrown 70s on his arm. It's really accurate, makes really good throws. His internal clock is good. The actions are good. He's pretty rangy out there and athletic. So I think he's got a really good foundation in that sense. With Namala, we've seen one half a season in the second half in 2024 that was phenomenal. He was one of the best teenage hitters in minor league baseball in the second half. Over the first 2 months of the season, Arjun Namala was arguably the best hitter in high A. He hit 289, 372, 528. He had the strikeout rate down to 17.9%. This was a guy that looked like he was trending with those, you know, defensive ability and the base running. This was a guy that looked like he was trending toward like a top 20 prospect in the game. You know, maybe kind of filling into like where Aiden Miller was. They were kind of headed in opposite directions at that point. And then things really kind of just took a turn for the worst, starting in June, and he never really righted the ship. Over the final few months of the season, he hit 184, 277, 290. That said, the strikeout rate, though it did climb from that 17%, was still below his career average and wasn't bad when you considered a 19-year-old at high A. It was like 23.5%. He still walked at an above average rate and had really bad luck on balls in play at 234 BABIP. So JJ, what I did was I sat down and I watched every single at bat from the first half. And then I watched every single, this is the longest number one report that I wrote this year. I did this, you know, November or whatever. And I watched every single at bat from the second half. It was a timing issue. And I think that was something that was called out to me on the backfields in 2024, in terms of the PD folks not being sure if he was necessarily ready for a full season level, you know, right out of the gate.
Because he did the up and back. He went to the FSL, and then they took him back, and then they put him back in it again, right?
Yeah, and then he really performed, and some of it was just some adjustments to his posture, which I think is a part of hitting that a lot of people maybe necessarily like don't necessarily think about. It's just in terms of like you being on time and your swing path can really be adjusted by how squatted or upright you are. And I, you know, we even saw this with Colt Emerson this year when he took his big step forward. It was a matter of him kind of adjusting posture, getting a little bit more upright, and you know, changing kind of his footing and stuff like that. Namal was really out in front on everything consistently, which is why I think the strikeout rate wasn't so bad. The whiff rate did jump on breaking balls, which will happen when you're out in front of stuff.
Just no damage.
When he was hitting in the first half and doing damage, he was right on time with a fastball and kind of catching, you know, the breaking stuff, the soft stuff out front at a contact point that he could actually do damage and backspin it. I think a lot of it is just going to come down to, you know, adjustments in the swing, probably some posture type stuff as he did, you know, sort of slouch a little bit more in the box in the second half. And I think, you know, eventually we'll see him get to a more consistent place in terms of the swing. This other guy I'm going to compare him to had a lot more success in the minors, but it's not that different from Cody Bellinger, like a really athletic mover. And I think at times Bellinger can get out of his swing. And I think it's similar with Namal. There's just guys like this that are kind of always having to make adjustments as they settle into some bad habits. The fact that he's so young, has as much experience as he has, and has a lot of belief, not only from inside the organization, but I think from a lot of scouts outside the organization, whether he ends up with the Blue Jays long-term or ends up, you know, someplace else as the Blue Jays continue to replicate the Dodgers North or whatever it is they're doing right now. It wouldn't shock me if this guy is, you know, a 10 to 12 year big leaguer that plays a whole lot of shortstop and 20 home run seasons.
So we kind of hung out on that for a little while, but bigger picture, how is this system better or worse than last year?
Yeah, I think the system is better. And I think a lot of it came down to, you can't really say anything negative. You can't say anything up or down in terms of Namala, because it was kind of the same kind of season where he had a good first half and a bad second. He had a bad first half and a good second last year. But they added talent, and a guy like JoJo Parker, Johnny King took a huge step forward. Gage Stanifer took a huge step forward. They had an international signing in Juan Sanchez that debuted in the DSL, was one of the top prospects in the Dominican Summer League. The underlying data looks really good. The scout feedback, not only from myself, but from Josh Norris, who's boots on the ground there in the DSL every summer. His reports were really good. And I think just pitching throughout the organization, you know, credit to Justin Lear and Ricky Meinhold and some of the approach changes that they've made, really focusing on attacking in the zone more consistently with your best stuff, getting guys to kind of zone and tunnel a little bit better. There's been a lot of success across their pitching development this year, even guys outside of the top 10 that I'm sure we'll talk about later in this podcast. And even a guy that they traded, like a Cal Steven, allowed them to go and get Shane Bieber. And then, of course, you know, he opted in for next year, so that trade looks even better now. That helped them go on this long World Series run and made some really important starts for them in October. So I think you look at this system, even though they've dealt some players away, it's a much better top 10. I think it's a really good top 7. And then you maybe get into a conversation of a little bit more Blue Jays systems of yore, where there's guys that are really good depth players, but maybe not a whole lot of like lurking future stars in that back half of the system. And even that, I might be selling them a little bit short on. So I think it's better. I think it was trending in the right direction last year. We said as much on this podcast, we wrote as much and kind of covered it throughout the year. It's at a point now where it's a pretty good top 5, and you know, they have 3 top 100 prospects, and I would say 4 or 5, maybe even 6 or 7 guys that could be in the conversation at some point this year, depending on how you know, Sanchez's debut is. If Ricky Tiedemann comes back fully healthy and impresses again, I'm sure he'll be in conversations. And if Johnny King continues to do what he did last year and kind of level up a little bit, same with Stanifer, both of those guys could maybe be back end of the top 100 conversation type of players.
We've kind of talked about this already in some ways, but we know that Yusavage, if Yusavage hasn't graduated, calamity has struck, because he's not that far away right now. He's in their opening day rotation. He will graduate. He should graduate. Assuming that, Namala obviously would be the logical one to go to two. We've already talked about Namala. We've already even talked about Parker. Is there someone else? I'll look at it this way. Is there someone else who could end up being their number one prospect? Is it crazy to think that Sanchez, I struggle to say that Sanchez is going to leapfrog those shortstops, because you just talked about how good Arjun Namala is defensively, and there's a lot of value in that. No matter how good a season Juan Sanchez has, Juan Sanchez is not going to have as much defensive value. I think we have video on here on the YouTube viewers. If you're on the podcast, just trust us when I say Juan Sanchez is one of the bigger, stouter infielders that you will see in the Dominican Summer League. Let's just put it that way. Like, he's going to be a bat primarily. Is he got a chance, or does someone else have a chance, or is it really probably going to be between the shortstops?
He would have to come stateside and have like a junior Caminero type of blow up, where it's like he's hitting 300, he's hitting for power, the underlying metrics are crazy, he's hitting these sort of light tower homers or whatever. But he doesn't have, I mean, he's not like, he's a really good prospect. I think it compares to a similarities to Caminero when he was in the Dominican Summer League. It's not that level of power just yet. I think he'll get to it. I think eventually he will get to sort of maybe 70 raw, and maybe even, you know, plus in game. Was a little more conservative, and you know, I think I put a maybe a 55. No, I didn't put a 60 on it. So, you know, there you go. I think he can get there. It would be, even from the perspective of him going to the Florida Complex League and having a Rainel Rodriguez season, right? Like, that's maybe a better comp. Because he's not a catcher, he doesn't have the defensive value. I don't know if I can get him there. What it would have to be is it would have to be bad seasons by Namala, and he starts to really tumble down the list, and Parker's defense is worse than we think, and he doesn't hit quite as much as we hope. So it might be a bad thing if Sanchez is number one in this system next year, frankly. And I don't know if there's another guy that has that sort of potential. Maybe Johnny King.
I can't craft the Ricky. I cannot craft the Ricky Tiedemann case, because
he would graduate.
He would graduate.
And I think they're going to be cautious with his innings this year, and rightfully so. But I think maybe Johnny King is a good one. Like, if King, you know, has a great season, you know, maybe starts in Dunedin and shoves there for 2 months, and they put him on that path that we saw with like Yusavage and Stanifer and Steven and some of those guys, and they move him up to Vancouver when it gets a little warmer, and he really performs over the course of the season in Vancouver, maybe gets some starts late in the year, similar to Stanifer in Double A. There's maybe King is like one of the top left-handed pitchers in baseball. I don't know if the command is there, and if it's possible for him to take that kind of a step in terms of command while adding a third pitch, which are two things that he kind of has to do to get to that top 100 conversation, be at that level. It's not, you know, impossible, but it's fairly improbable that that happens.
So what is this org good at developing?
Well, that kind of feeds into the last one. I think it's pitching right now. I think we stand here a year later, and we could talk about the number of guys they've gotten to the majors, you know, in terms of underrated hit tool based players, the Davis Schneiders and those types. They've done really well with those guys. Even guys they found off the scrap heap, like an Ernie Clement, they've done good with those guys. You know, Addison Barger was homegrown. Bo Bichette was homegrown. You know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., of course, is homegrown, though it's been a few years since those guys have gotten up. But they've had a consistent wave of at least decent players that contributed. But I think right now, you look at the steps that so many of their pitchers have taken over the last year. We wrote about it in depth. There was a full article, you know, up on the site, still there, talking about the upgrades in the Blue Jays pitching development. And they took a very strategic approach. They took a full year with Ricky Meinhold in the organization, kind of assessing things and where they were at in 2024. They made some decisions. You know, they made some changes in terms of personnel. They brought in Justin Lear. Him and Ricky really connected. And I think he was kind of the last piece in them being able to kind of implement some things. I don't know if they thought it would take off as quickly as it did, but it really did take off. And it wasn't just with guys that they had recently brought in, like a Yesavage or a Steven. It was those guys like Stanifer. It was, you know, a guy like Johnny King, who was a draft pick. But it's tough with these prep pitching prospects to kind of get them to take that next step forward. You know, eventually he got traded, but Kendry Rojas had a pretty decent season as well. So there was a lot of success, I think, kind of across the system on the pitching front. And then they have some guys that are returning from injury, and a guy like Ricky Thiemann later this year, Jake Bloss is another one that was kind of a breakout prospect with the Astros that then got flipped to the Jays. That's on their 40-man roster. Those guys could come back and maybe contribute, as well as some of the other guys that, you know, there's one guy in particular we'll talk about when we get into the podcast version, talking sleepers, that I want to dig into a little bit. But a lot of arms in the system that I think you can be excited about. And as they bring in more talent, got another wave from this draft class, be interesting to see how, you know, those guys look a year later.
Well, as you said, a little bit of foreshadowing there. This is the end of the video portion of this on the Baseball America YouTube feed. But if you are listening on the podcast, or if you want to go listen on the podcast feed, we'll have more talking about Blue Jays sleepers outside of the top 10 right after this quick break. So, Jeff, you said you wanted to talk about sleepers. Let's talk about sleepers. So, who are some of the prospects outside of the top 10 that Blue Jays fans and prospect fans should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I think everyone knows Yohendrick Pinongo was everybody's favorite Rule 5 selection across Twitter.
So why did he not get picked with the batted ball data, the offensive numbers that he has? I think we have a clear answer, but
yeah, it's a I put a 30 on the glove, JJ, and I think it's
a 20 maybe.
I think it might be a 20. Yeah. I think I might be polite on that it's
we're projecting that he will improve down the road.
Yeah.
To get to not being the worst defensive left fielder out there.
The organization was making a case that he did get better last year in left field. But as you saw in my highlight video that I had shared with you guys internally, when I was doing the handbook work, not great.
Okay. He's really pretty bad out there. I will describe this because that's video that we don't have rights to. So that is, but to just describe it, Pinongo in the outfield, it's not like he just doesn't have range. It does seem at times like that the ball's arrival surprises him, that gravity does exist. You know, like that it's like, oh, it's here, and what do I do with it now? Is that, I mean, how would you describe it? You watched it even more times than I did. Like, there's a lot of plays where the ball and him are just not friends.
Yeah, I think there's a combination of bad jumps, not a ton of speed, and an adventurous streak that he likes to get a little risky. He likes to dive. And
he is not one who should be.
He's not somebody that should probably dive.
He should play the percentages.
Yeah, there were times like not even stuff that he didn't catch or bobbled or bungled or the timing was off. It was like he missed it and the ball went by him while he was diving. And it was like he put in a lot of – the center fielder has to back him up constantly because you know that some balls are going to squeak by. I don't want to crap on the guy.
This summarizes, like, if you said, well, why did the Blue Jays not protect him? Because they didn't think he would get picked. Why would he not get picked? Because there's not really a room for a Rule 5 DH. There's just not. Like, I know this happened at once or twice in the 21st century. Chris Shelton was kind of a DH, primarily, you know, drafted as a catcher, but first baseman / DH 20 plus years ago. But that's why he's available. We did talk about that. This guy can really hit. But what are the chances that he can get to a playable big league career? I mean, again, I don't know if you're getting to a 30 in left field probably doesn't get you to the roster spot, does it? You have to get to a 40, I would say, at least.
I, I'm mean, like he might be able. Actually, I even think that's underselling Davis Schneider to say that he can get to Davis Schneider defensive levels. But
I think that's a dream. I think that would be like
probably that's not exactly outstanding. I mean, he's going to have to hit his way into the lineup, and it's going to have to be, you know, the angles will have to get a little bit better, and all the other stuff will have to stay the same. And then it's going to be like, all right, like this guy is, you know, a legitimate DH. He's an excellent hitter. We have to get him into the lineup. I mean, that, like, even if you're a believer, I think 40% seems kind of optimistic that he can pull that off. That's just, it's hard to do that, you know, especially considering there's a lot of guys whose bats are probably equally as good that are 40 defenders at multiple positions. That might suck up those at bats with teams, you know, when you're looking at a 26 man roster. He's just a tough player to get on. I think he's going to have to get up if there was an injury or something and they could play him at DH, and he hits, and then, you know, they could package him in a trade to a team that doesn't have a DH. Like, that's kind of the best case scenario as I'm going through, you know, options in my head. It's a fun bat. It's a fun player. It's the kind of guy that fantasy baseball players kind of want to dream on and maybe roster in their leagues. But I don't know if it's the kind of guy that actual real life major league teams want to take the chance on rosters, because it's really hard. And especially considering he's smaller, so he's not going to be a first baseman.
It's a challenge. Okay, so that's one. But there are others who are a little bit more of the conventional sleeper variety. So yeah. Who else comes out, Jeff?
I think right-hander Silvano Hecheverria, they had signed him in 2024 out of Cuba, $240,000. So not a big signing bonus. Was a DSL guy, you know, signed like late in the, I think he signed in like June or May. And like 4 days later, he made his affiliated debut in the DSL, came stateside 2025, started at the complex, went to low A, you know, and really performed. I mean, he was really good this year. One of their best performing pitchers. It's not the most, you know, standout stuff, but the stuff isn't bad. You know, still throws 3 to 5. He'll touch 98 miles an hour. It's not crazy release traits or a ton of movement. Does get some arm side run in the fastball that maybe allows it to play up a little bit. But it's a really good slider. Probably above average. Maybe as he gets more exposure in high A, I might be more comfortable going with a plus there. I did get some pluses. And it's plus command, you know, control. He throws a ton of strikes, a guy that should move pretty quick. I think a lot of scouts wise looked at him as a potential number five type of starter. And I don't think that's crazy to project. Though he was older, obviously, last year, still going to be 23 years old for all of this year. He got a decent amount of time in Vancouver. He got like 4 or 5 starts there over the end of the season, and was really good. It wouldn't be altogether shocking, and we'll see how the rosters fall together in the spring, if he does make a jump to double A. And I think once he's there, you know, there's a chance this guy could pitch his way into the big league picture. You know, maybe not with the Blue Jays, but we'll see. You know, going into 2027. Like I said, interesting. He's big at 6'4", you know, 220, 225 pounds. Kind of already has the grown man frame. Proved that he could handle some innings through, you know, 86 and 2/3 last year. Probably could have thrown a little bit more had he not been at a complex affiliate, kind of missed the first month of the season. Maybe would have exceeded 100 innings. I don't think that's crazy to think. Could be a guy that levels up quite a bit next year, especially if the velocity takes another jump and he's more 4 to 6. That would be a little bit more interesting. So, and then just the quality of the changeup, it is kind of a 2-pitch mix. Some, you know, more positive scouts see the number 5 starter. There are some other guys that maybe see him more as like a 7th or 8th inning type guy.
So there are a couple of guys in this top 30, the 11 through 30, who are kind of more of the control profile. Like Fernando Perez is kind of truly the guy who's like, if he could just have a little bit more oomph to his stuff, right? Like, I feel like there's a lot of people out there who love the guy who can throw the baseball, you know, on the black over and over. Fernando Perez is that. It's just a question of, he can throw it on the black, but is it going to go out faster than it came in regularly when he does so? You know, is he another guy who, if there could be a little bit of development here, or is it probably he's a little bit maxed out?
Yeah, I mean, just physically, he's not the most athletic guy. You know, it's kind of, you know, he's listed at 170. The weight is probably more like 215 at this point. There's just not a lot of spin traits. There's not a ton of you know, interesting shapes. Not a lot of power in the profile. I mean, things could change.
There's not an above average pitch in the profile right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's an average changeup, and that's about it. But it is 70 command. I think he had the highest strike rate of starters that threw like over 200 pitches or whatever in the minor leagues last year. Just, you know, pounds the zone. That's kind of how he operates. Moves the ball around the zone. We'll show you, you know, four different shapes, couple breaking balls, a couple variations on the fastball. Yeah, as an interesting nickname though, he's the GOAT, because there was a video when he signed where there were goats roaming around in the background. And so the scout that was watching it, like, called it out, and it kind of became a famous video that got passed around the Blue Jays front office. So when he showed up, they let him know that he was known as the GOAT in the Blue Jays front office. So a good nickname though. I mean, he may not have the stuff, but he's got the nickname.
Am I right to say, like, that is the one thing about the Blue Jays is that you said you get to that 10 list on this, and after that, it kind of does start to tail off. The key thing on the pitching side that jumps out to me is not a whole lot of guys. Like, I always love to find those guys in that 11 to 30 range where it's like, hey, if this guy can really take a step forward, a grade or two control improvement, he could really take off. Or, you know, this guy who I do the red system, and it's like, well, Luis May has never had great control. Zach Maxwell hadn't had great control. But if you throw 103 and you got a slider, maybe you can get that to all work. The Blue Jays, I feel like that you get to 12, 13, 14 on this list after that, and it's like, it's a lot of guys where the stuff pitcher-wise is a little fringier. It's like, okay, they either have a changeup or they have control, but there's not a whole lot of guys where you're like, they have that combination of a breaking ball and arm speed for the fastball to really kind of fit in a bullpen or to kind of take another step forward. That's where I feel like this does kind of tail off a little bit.
Yeah, the guys that are, you know, more stuff guys at the back of the list are probably relievers. I'd say the one guy you could maybe point to, but he's had a very rocky road, is Brandon Barriera. You know, when he's on the mound, like, the stuff is still there. I mean, he'll ride it up to 95, 96 on the four seam. You know, the slider is pretty filthy. He throws like a low to mid 90s cutter now as kind of his primary fastball. It's still a plus slider. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, if we can see where the cutter slider combination goes, where he's mixing in some four seamers and there's maybe some more control there, and he can pitch 65 innings in a year, like, even, right? He sees 65, I think we're happy. He's a dude that could take a big step. It's just, he's never been on the mound, and you know, he's a little overweight after his first season, lost that weight, and then got injured, and then came back and got injured again. So he's just had a very unusual path. So this is kind of a make or break season for Barriera, but it's not out of the, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he shows up and shoves. I mean, there is at least nasty stuff there.
So that's a look at some of the sleepers in the Blue Jays organization. That was our look at the Blue Jays for our deep dive. There are many more of these deep dives on the Baseball America YouTube channel and the podcast feed. And if you enjoyed this, please leave a review, like, subscribe to the Baseball America YouTube channel. We want to make sure that you get all the great content that we're producing there. And obviously check out everything that we're doing at baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.